Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, July 17th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, rescission package heads to House for final vote. Public broadcasting faces funding cuts. The Eel River Recovery Project hosts native grass restoration event at Cutto Creek Ranch. And final incident update for Orleans Complex Fire and update on Marble Complex. So stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming up. Around midnight our time, the Senate approved the Trump administration's $9 billion rescission package that aimed to claw back money already allocated for public media and foreign aid spending. This would eliminate $1.1 billion in funding for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, which acts as a conduit for federal money to NPR, PBS, and other smaller public-run stations like KMUD. So what is being lost? Public broadcasting includes not only local journalism, but also life-saving emergency alerts, educational resources for children, families, and educators, workforce training certification programs, high school sports programs, and community storytelling, and still more. Public broadcasting stations are a part of our national emergency communications backbone. Many are the primary hubs for the emergency alert system in their states, which carry amber alerts, support severe weather warnings, and are part of the technology FEMA and others use to push wireless emergency alerts to your phone. Without public broadcasting, none of that system works. Minority Leader of the United States Senate, Chuck Schumer, spoke in a news conference yesterday after the Senate vote about the importance of public broadcasting.
Republicans are leading the charge to implement President Trump's devastating and wildly unpopular cuts that impact millions of Americans. This time, targeting local news throughout the country, including in rural areas that lack broadband and other options. To be clear, gutting bipartisan investments and hurting America's standing throughout the world is not popular. Losing access to local news, radio, and weather alerts, particularly in rural areas, is not popular. Americans rely on public broadcasting for weather alerts, and these cuts couldn't come at a worse time right now, after we're seeing the devastating tragedy in Texas, and we're left with even more questions about what the cuts to the Weather Service and to FEMA, what effects they had. That's why today I called for a full-scale independent investigation into whether Trump and Secretary Noem's haphazard policy changes and job cuts delayed aid, cost lives, left our nation vulnerable to future disasters.
From a public statement from the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, 120 rural stations rely on CPB for at least 25% of their budgets, and 33 stations rely on CPB for more than 50%. Past CPB and Government Accountability Office reports found that up to 50% of rural stations could go off air without federal funding. CPB funds critical public safety infrastructure, including national emergency alert systems, coordination with FEMA and the National Weather Service, and Sound Exchange music licensing for streaming. Once again, coordination with FEMA and the National Weather Service are life-saving utilities of public broadcasting that will be gone if stations have to close. One of the Republicans that voted against the rescissions package, Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski, stated her support for CPB and its importance on the Senate floor yesterday.
When it comes to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, my colleagues know I've been a strong supporter. I will continue to be a strong supporter. If you don't like what's going on within NPR, you think that there's too much bias there, we can address that. We can address that, but you don't need to gut the entire Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The entity, the program that provides for so much support, particularly for those in rural places, it's not just your news. It's your tsunami alerts. It is your landslide alert. It is your volcano alert. It is the weather to let you know it's safe to go out and get on the fishing grounds. It's your educational programming. I am going to continue to be an advocate for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This is not the first time that the government has tried to cut funding from public broadcasting. In 1969, after President Nixon proposed cuts, Fred Rogers, creator and host of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, testified before the U.S. Senate Subcommittee on Communications to defend the continued funding of public broadcasting.
This is what I give I give an expression of care every day to each child to help him realize that he is unique. I end the program by saying, you've made this day a special day by just your being you. There's no person in the whole world like you, and I like you just the way you are. And I feel that if we in public television can only make it clear that feelings are mentionable and manageable, we will have done a great service for mental health. I think that it's much more dramatic that two men could be working out their feelings of anger, much more dramatic than showing something of gunfire. I'm constantly concerned about what our children are seeing. And for 15 years, I have tried in this country and Canada to present what I feel is a meaningful expression of care.
Do you narrate it?
I'm the host, yes. And I do all the puppets, and I write all the music, and I write all the scripts.
Well, I'm supposed to be a pretty tough guy, and this is the first time I've had goosebumps for the last 2 days.
Well, I'm grateful not only for your goosebumps, but for your interest in our kind of communication.
Public broadcasting plays a vital role in providing essential services like local journalism, educational content, and emergency alerts. With the proposed funding cuts to the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, many stations, particularly in rural areas, could face significant challenges. The impact of these cuts extends beyond entertainment, affecting safety infrastructure, workforce training, and community engagement. As these discussions continue, the future of public broadcasting remains a key issue for many communities across the country. For more information, the website is protectmypublicmedia.org, or you could follow along with the vote at pbs.org/newshour/. As of news time, a final vote has not yet taken place. It needs to be decided by July 18th, or funds are kept for the already approved 2 years. KMUD will be following the story and provide updates as they come. The Eel River Recovery Project invites the public to a native grass restoration field trip this Sunday, July 20th, at Cutto Creek Ranch, part of a community effort to restore the Eel River watershed. Jordan Pangelinan reports.
The Eel River Recovery Project invites the public to a native grass restoration field trip at the Cutto Creek Ranch on Sunday, July 20th. This outdoor event is part of ERRP's ongoing effort to engage communities in monitoring and restoring the ecological health of the Eel River watershed. By combining community involvement with scientific knowledge, ERRP works to assess watershed conditions, raise awareness, and collaboratively develop and implement strategies for ecosystem restoration. KMUD News spoke with Patrick Higgins, Managing Director of ERRP, who shared more information about the upcoming event and its significance.
The Eel River Recovery Project, since August of 2023, has been involved in a very large-scale forest health project funded by CAL FIRE, Climate Change Initiative, from cap-and-trade monies, and we're thinning about 1,000 acres in the 10-Mile Creek watershed. And it's actually the east branch of the South Fork Eel, and it kind of runs pretty close to Laytonville, but you don't see it much from 101. And also, there's an earthquake fault that runs right along the highway pretty much, and on the east side, it's all grass and oaks because of a geologic change into what's called the Central Belt Melange. And what that sets up is it sets up amazing grasslands in the 10-Mile Creek watershed, and that aligns with amazing stewards who are in the hills, many of them with a desire to restore their lands ecologically. So on Sunday, we're going to take a trip from the Eel River Recovery Project office, and I'll go back to kind of how to find that later. But then we'll go to the Cotto Creek Ranch. So that's Sunday, July 20th, 9 a.m. at the Recovery Project office. It's about a 10-minute ride out Branscombe Road to the 1,400-acre Cotto Creek Ranch.
Specialists in native plants will be on hand to guide attendees through the identification and care of native plants, as well as best practices for establishing them in their own local landscapes. Among them will be Steve Brown, a restoration contractor who works with ERRP on CAL FIRE-supported projects. Brown actively restores his own forests and grasslands and will share his expertise on erosion control and forest health. He will discuss how improving upland forest conditions and managing gully erosion can enhance groundwater retention and boost water flow into meadows, a vital step for improving overall watershed resilience. Higgins tells more.
There we will learn about ecological restoration of native grasses from Rachel Campbell of Hybrid Indigenous Stewardship. So that will involve kind of how you use cultural fire as well as other methods to bring back desired native plants and native grasses. And then she'll have with her Jen Riddell, who's a botanist, and she can teach people how to understand how to key grasses. And Rachel has another person coming who is a taxonomist, so it'll be about that. But the reason that we're convening the public is because we want to start a volunteer native grass seed bank where people would take native grasses and plant them in areas next to their gardens that they were already watering. And if they had a love and fascination of this, then they could become part of the solution. So at Caddo Creek Ranch, about 40% of the meadow we're working on has native grasses. It hasn't had a cow on it in 50 years, and Tony and Liz Varnhagen, who are great stewards and own it, don't intend to graze it. So that's why it makes an ideal demonstration site. And so people will be able to get come out there and take a look around and then learn a lot about native grass and why we need to restore it.
Higgins acknowledges colonial impacts on native grass, such as species ERRP is dealing with now. With historical evidence to prove damages of invasive species, Higgins explains that this can lead to more risks, such as wildfires.
The grasslands are in serious neglect, and they were lush and green in 1859, and then we were taken over by European short grasses that are perennial, and they're really flammable. So that plays right back into our fire strategy. We'd love to see the green instead of the brown and less fuels. Much better food for the animals, the short grasses, and now things like the star thistle and the bull thistle. They're noxious and not edible, so to get those replaced with native species would be a very, very laudable ecological goal. And also the meadows actually have gullies, so they've cut down, and that's one of the reasons they've been taken over by non-native species. So we want to use forest health waste wood to create stair steps, they call them check dams, in the meadows, and then the dirt will come down and fill up above it, and then we want to plant it with native grass plugs, and then we want to make the whole meadow more lush by raising the water table through that activity. So this is, it's articulated. The recovery project has been working in the 10 Mile Basin since 2018. We have amazing partnerships, and we have an extremely capable workforce for our forest health. And right now we're doing bioengineering with Native Ecosystems and Logan Edwards and Edwards Excavation and Restoration. And we'll have to get back on the air with you soon on that, because we're going to start building these magnificent fish houses on Lower Caddo Creek, and then in September on Streeter Creek near Camp Winter Rainbow and the Black Oak Ranch. So we're organizing in 10 Mile Creek mostly, but in the general area, also over in Covelo, we've had active projects. People can check out eelriverrecovery.org online, and that'll show you a lot of what we're up to. And then we have a Facebook page, and this event is posted to Facebook. And then if people want to buzz me, I'm at 707-223-7200.
While there are misconceptions of native plants or non-native plants, Higgins explains that indigenous practices from local areas have shown less risks of wildfires or ecological harm.
When a UC researcher summed it up in the 30s, he said, native grasses have been virtually eliminated. We have a whole new suite of grasses. Get used to it. We don't think that's a good idea. This is a very challenging undertaking, and so one of the conceptions is that you can't do it because it's too expensive. So, and it is labor intensive, but we hope to root it as part of the commitment to stewardship in the watershed. And so people just come back and back and make it part of their routines. We want to do this with controlled fire and prescribed fire as well. Get volunteers out there because the Indians tended the landscape for thousands of years, and the result was one that was fire resistant, one that had a lot more water, one that had much better biodiversity. And so we need to retrace our steps and use traditional ecological knowledge and see if we can restore harmony in the eel. And grasses are a big part of it.
Higgins discusses the vital role native grasses play in maintaining ecosystem health, along with insights from other experts who will also be in attendance.
So the grasslands, their principal benefit hydrologically was they were giant sponges. And now they're, you know, pretty desiccated and seasonally extremely flammable. And so that's all reversible as long as we get on it and stay on it. If you hit grasslands once, like with a fire, then you're going to get invasives back. But if you're managing the invasives and using fire and putting native grass plugs and seeds into the ground, then ultimately we think we can win. And the 10 Mile Creek Basin is about a 65-square-mile basin. A large-scale experiment of this nature will be done by the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District, and that's going to be on the Vassar property where we're also doing forest health. So we'll have more on that later. But the Caddo Creek Ranch is a gem, and the owners, Tony and Liz Varnhagen, all they want to do is restore it. And they are great stewards, and so it represents a unique opportunity for the community, for the schools, for the Eel River Recovery Project. Hoping that people in the 10-mile watershed that are listening, that have grasslands, will turn out to kind of see what's going on. We're going to start about 9 in the morning at the office, and I'll have some baked goods and coffee just for a jump start. Then we'll go into the field, and Rachel Campbell and Jen Rydell will talk about native grass seeds and harvest and grass strategies. And Steve Brown of the Recovery Project will be there too, because he's a practitioner. And it's his idea about the potential for a native grass seed bank. So it's an exciting time. This is a whole area of restoration. It doesn't have a huge amount of funding, but we've been able to get some jumpstart money. And a lot of what we're doing, though, at the Vassar or at the Varnhagen Meadow and Caddo Creek Ranch is volunteer-driven, and that's beautiful, too. And again, Erin Newroth is our volunteer coordinator. She's at 707-272-0832.
While working with the community, ERRP also works with the Hybrid Indigenous Stewardship Crew in order to better understand the knowledge of the historical native seeds.
Mechanism for restoration and the team out there to support seed collection are part of the Hybrid Indigenous Stewardship Crew, and they are mostly members of the Caddo tribe, and the seeds are produced in abundance. So for us to harvest them from areas that are rich in native grasses does not have a negative ecological consequence. And one of the concerns is, like, if you were selling seeds, are you sure that you have what you say you have? And so that's where we'll have experts in seed collection and also taxonomists like Jen Rydell. But we don't intend to sell them. But then at the same time, we want to know, as we're using these for native grassland restoration around the 10-mile watershed, that they are of local stock and that they are the species that we think they are. And then we'll also then know kind of what niches they like over time.
Everyone is welcome to attend this Sunday, July 20th at 9 a.m. It will be held at the ERRP office at 44960 Highway 101, number 6. Again, that address is 44960 Highway 101, number 6. If you have questions, you can call Pat Higgins at 707-223-7200. or visit the ERRP Facebook page at Eel River Recovery Project. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan. Operations Section Chief on California Team 9, Jeff Hansen gives a final incident update on the Marble Complex from the Klamath National Forest Facebook news release on today's overview of activity of both fires, status, and plans for today and going forward.
We're here on the Marble Complex. Today is July the 17th, 2025. This will be your last update from myself and California Team 9, and I'll come back to that in a moment. On the Jacket Fire, still for a good week now, we have seen no smoke or no heat on the Jacket Fire. Things are really good down there and no issues. Up on the Summit Fire, kind of the same thing. Not a lot of heat left out there and very little smoke. Most of that is in this rock, natural barriers and rock bands underneath but north of Manhattan Lake. Still burning out some small pockets of brush, trees here and there, but it's all really small and has no chance to escape our containment lines. We're pulling most of all of our resources off the hill today and back here to Etna and to demob and head home and on to the next fire. We are going to be leaving the local Klamath Hotshots for through Sunday out here, and they'll be monitoring the fire and taking care of any last heats that we're finding out there and making sure we get all of our backhaul and trash and everything that we've done out there off the hill and leave it back into a good spot. But like I said, California Team 9 today's our last day on the fire, and we're turning it back over to the forest tomorrow. We want to thank you on behalf of Team 9. I'll thank you all for your host of us here on the Scott Valley and being neighborly and hope not to see you too soon, but we'll probably see you again, and have a great day and a good summer.
Beginning at 7 a.m. on Friday, July 18th, those seeking updates or information about the Marble Complex can contact the Klamath National Forest through its regular communication channels. At that time, the incident-specific email and phone number will no longer be active. For fire information, the phone number is 530-643-0279. Again, that's 530-643-0279, and that is from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The email will be sm.fs.klamathinfo@usda.gov. Again, the email will be sm.fs.klamathinfo@usda.gov. An area closure is currently in effect due to the Summit Fire. Residents and visitors are asked to avoid these areas. For current evacuation information, visit the Siskiyou County Office of Emergency Services. KMUD will no longer update on the Marble Complex fire unless conditions change. Planning Operations Section Chief Leif Matheson gives an update on the Orleans Complex from the Klamath National Forest Facebook news release on today's overview of activity of both fires, status, and plans for today and going forward.
Hey, good morning. My name is Leif Matheson, Planning Operations with the Orleans Complex. I'm here to give you your morning operational update. So starting out here in Division Alpha, last night we had Division Alpha staffed. Crews came in and started doing a little bit of tactical firing along the road to try to keep this fire edge straight. Additionally, they did a little bit of aerial ignition with uncrewed aerial systems along these ridge lines to get this fire backing off into Nordheimer Creek to prevent any slope reversal uphill runs. Everything was looking good in there, and this morning day crews are going to go back in there and basically monitor the fire along the road and continue to prep out in front as we prepare for future firing operations. Division Delta for the day, the plan is to, this has all been plumbed and ready to go. There's a little bit of prep here out by between DP 55 out towards the old Boise Fire Scar. They're going to get that prepped and plumbed, and then with the anticipation of starting some tactical firing operations tonight. So that's what we're doing there. Contingency still seems is still working out here. They've got a good plan. They've got a whole suite of resource advisors and cultural specialists today to look at their proposed ridges. So we should have a pretty good plan starting tomorrow where we're going to be able to start working. Coming around into hotel, similar actions. There's a little bit of fire moving up towards DP 60. Crews are just monitoring that as it comes up to their control lines. Similar here at the Tango Hotel break, a little bit of fire moving up towards DP 70. They're just monitoring that as it comes up. Tango is still out here scouting and looking for opportunities to bring indirect lines down through, probably looking at the old perch fire lines, but trying to get some of that on a map so we have a pretty solid understanding of where they're going. Swinging around here into X-ray, it's been really quiet in X-ray. They had a night shift in there last night, and they'll continue to monitor that. This will probably be the last night shift in X-ray tonight. Day crews are going in there mopping up, and they're able to start to access just a little bit of this road to make sure that the road itself is holding between the fire line and the Salmon River.
Siskiyou County Sheriff's Office expanded its evacuation orders July 15th to include FRK 1709, Forks of Salmon, SIS-1707-B, SIS-1708, SIS-1804, and SIS-1805. They join the following zones already under an evacuation order, which are SIS-1703, SIS-1704. The locations for that is Butler Creek, Lewis Creek, Bloomer Mine Residence, and Nordheimer Campground. The next location is SIS-1707-A and SIS-1803-A. Zones SIS-1705, SIS-1710, SIS-1802, SIS-1808, and SIS-1906 are under an evacuation warning, where residents are advised to be prepared to evacuate if conditions become more threatening. The latest evacuation information can be found at protectgenesis.com, that is protect.genasys.com. The road between Butler Flat and Nordheimer Campground remains closed as rocks and burning debris continue to fall into the roadway. The Six Rivers and Klamath National Forest issued a joint closure for July 16th within the vicinity of the Butler Fire. The closures include Nordheimer and Oak Bottom Campgrounds. The temperatures are expected to be slightly cooler today, with highs in the mid to low 90s. Winds will most likely come out of the west with occasional gusts up to 20 miles an hour. Persistently high temperatures will keep fuels dry and increase potential fire danger. Individuals seeking relief from the heat by recreating in streams or rivers or in the forest need to be mindful of their vehicle's condition or where they park. Roadside sparks or dried vegetation against the heated undercarriage of a vehicle could quickly result in a wildfire. Campgrounds should never be left attended and should be dead out and cool to the touch before leaving. Remember, drown, stir, feel, and repeat. Please report suspected wildfires by calling 911. To stay updated, visit watchduty.org or by typing in Humble Alert sign up in your internet browser. KMUD News will continue to update as we get more information. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.
And that's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Patricia Tinkler, and thanks to our reporter, Jordan Pangelinan. KMUD News is online, and you can find us at KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@KMUD.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by the Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.